Monster Man, episode 288. Octopus, comma, giant, to piranha, parentheses, cold water, close parentheses.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are cracking on through the animal section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. We begin this group of animal monsters with the Octopus, comma, giant. Now, the Octopus, comma, giant is a classic of maritime adventure fiction. Okay, probably the most famous example of this tentacle fight is a squid, comma, giant. But nonetheless, I feel like this one appears in so much art and in so many films and books that it just goes without saying that it should be in a D&D supplement. And to be honest, I'm surprised that it wasn't in one of the existing ones. We got a giant Tuatara in the basic set. I guess they do have three eyes. But no octopus, comma, giant. Whatever, I'm glad that we have it now. Particularly, I like that the illustration here clearly draws on the existing visual tradition of giant octopus illustrations. And that sounds like a weird thing to say, but there definitely is one. I read a whole thing about sea monsters in literature and art at one point. This is 20 years ago now, but they showed different depictions of giant octopuses attacking ships. And, you know, they're relatively consistent, probably because they all result from the same, you know, small number of original exemplars. I mean, here we get a slightly different perspective, but nonetheless, we get the octopus's tentacles emerging from the water to haul people off of a boat, or ship, a vessel. Now the downside of the octopus, comma, giant is that I'm not sure that it can really do this. Like, it's not that tough. The octopus, comma, giant is a dangerous opponent because it throws out a lot of attacks, and it has a pretty good to hit. I mean, like, I'm not saying it's not dangerous, but we're talking about a monster that has, on average, 40 hit points, and is AC7. This is an opponent for a mid-level adventuring party, and that's fair enough. I would say that the mid-level sweet spot is probably where your characters have gone onto a dandy pirate ship and are going around the world being dandy pirates and exploring lost islands and fighting sea monsters. So that makes perfect sense. But I just don't know that this thing necessarily hauls people into the water like that. I mean, I would have it haul people into the water. I don't see why not. But it's maybe an example of what you expect from the monster being not quite what the actual stat line delivers. Again, against a smaller group, I think it's very dangerous because it's got all these attacks and then it can do persistent damage as well. But in general, I reckon having it, you know, taking on a ship makes it look maybe a little more dangerous than it really is. I could be wrong. Next up, we have the owl, comma, giant. I don't really have that much to say about the owl, comma, giant, except that it has a very atmospheric illustration. And I do like that this section ends with a brief reminder that owls are not necessarily friendly. It is odd, isn't it, that we have certain birds that we think of as good and certain birds that we think of as bad. And in general, we're pretty chill about owls. Maybe it's because they're sacred to the goddess Athena. Maybe it's because their big eyes make them look friendly. I mean, I don't think they do. But, you know, every time someone shows you a photograph of an owl's deadly beak or ripping talons, you see these things on social media all the time, and people are like, oh, you know, you think owls are fluffy and friendly, and they're like, actually like this. And, of course, we do think owls are fluffy and friendly, but there's no reason that we should think that they're birds of prey too, right? Just curious how we characterize animals, right? So, that's nice. Giant owls are pretty cool. You do sometimes get people riding them. One can definitely see them being sort of like companions to a wizard or being ridden by smaller creatures. Some kind of forest sprites or whatever could ride around on giant owls. I think that'd be fine. Yeah, overall I'm okay with the owl, comma, giant. Next up we have the oyster, comma, giant. The best thing about the oyster, comma, giant, in my view, and I'm not disparaging the monster at all, but the best thing about it is this illustration. Because I think this illustration is delightful. In this illustration we have, is he meant to be a sea elf or a merman or something? He's got legs anyway, and he has got an oyster, comma, giant that's clamped shut on his foot and trapped him. And he's got his trident, and he's like trying to wedge it open and get free. But the great thing about the illustration is his facial expression, because it's not panic, It's annoyance. He's really, like, you can tell that this guy's having a morning. You know, here he was, striding along the seafloor, looking for the sunken treasure chest that contains the legendary blue jewel. He's got his trident ready in case he gets attacked by any eels, comma, giant. You know, he thinks he's got everything sorted out, and what does he do? Only go and step in an oyster, comma, giant, and now his foot is stuck. And he's not, it's not an expression of panic. He's not like, oh no, I only have a few moments to prize open this oyster, comma, giant before my air runs out. You know, what shall I do? He's not thinking, oh no, I'm stuck here, now the eels, comma, giant are going to come in here and rip me to shreds. You know, this isn't like a face of desperation. He just looks like he stepped in dog poop. His expression says, like, ah, not this again. And why does this always happen to Thrognar? So he's having a pretty rough morning. It just seems to be one of those days when everything goes wrong, like stepping in an oyster, comma, giant. I don't know why, but oysters, comma, giant, and similar, you know, shellfish, they never really work as monsters. They actually kind of work less in their giant form because they tend to have that, like, that kind of lip around the bit where the shell closes. And when you think about, like, you know, the shells of bivalves, is bivalves the word I'm looking for? I think it is. If you look at those shells, I believe they can actually be pretty sharp, right? The one mistranslation that claims that Hypatia of Alexandria was killed by being murdered with broken shells. So you can envision that, like, if something big like that, like, slammed shut on your ankle, it would really hurt. It would be like, you know, a bear trap closing on your ankle. You wouldn't like that. But it has this kind of, like, lip on it, and it just looks annoying. It looks like you've been caught between two bowling lane bumpers or something. It just doesn't seem that threatening. Might be a visual problem more than anything else. And also, like, there's a certain inherent lack of credibility in immobile monsters. I definitely think that this is something that serves to be, like, a dangerous landscape function, right? It's there to trap people who have to walk along the ocean floor while they fight opponents who can swim more effectively. It's fine, there's nothing wrong with it. I just think that there's something funny about this illustration and the sort of, like, workplace comedy aspect that it brings to monster fighting. Finally, we have the Piranha parentheses cold water. Again, this is like the footpad lizard. I tried to look up why there should be a distinction between cold and warm water piranhas, and I did not find one. Maybe it's because my understanding is that piranhas thrive in relatively warm climates. According to advice for, like, aquarium enthusiasts that I found, you want to keep a piranha's habitat warmer than you would a lot of other fish species. So maybe the idea is that in a kind of cold Northern Europe analog, you're not gonna find a piranha-like creature, but here's one that you can use. Right? Maybe that's the idea. But the weird thing is that there's no piranha parentheses warm water, even though that would be like the normal piranha's habitat, but there's also no, like, piranha regular. So this is the normal piranha, only it's been given this label cold water. There's the piranha comma giant, but there's no piranha comma normal sized except this one. So we have two modified piranhas, but sort of no ordinary piranha. Unless there's a piranha in, like, the fish, comma, regular sized entry. I don't know. These categories are weird and they don't make a lot of sense. And it doesn't matter, but it bothers me. And I've got to get past that trap of letting it bother me, or else it's not going to go well for me. I mean, I failed to do so in the previous three books, so it's hard to imagine it'll happen here. Anyway, whatever. All of the things described about piranha behavior in this entry, I think, are probably not true. So all that stuff about piranha skeletonizing cows, or about putting the first cow in the water as piranha bait, and blah blah blah. Like, I don't think piranhas, like most dangerous animals, aren't as dangerous as sensational TV shows and, like, travel narratives have made them out to be. I get the impression that sort of European travelers and Teddy Roosevelt and whoever go to Brazil, and the guides tell them, like, the most sensational story they can, and then they write it down as if it were the absolute truth. At least it's a gross exaggeration. There are cases of people being attacked by piranhas, but they're quite rare. They just fish. They have big teeth, but that's about it. You know, they look scary, which is why they make such great kind of monsters. Again, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, when I was in high school, I knew a guy who thought that the Cthulhu mythos was connected to sort of Sumerian mythology, and that's because of the Simon Necronomicon to some extent, but it's also because the Cthulhu mythos was in the Deities and Demigods book, along with actual mythology. So if you're getting your ideas about the real world from gaming books, then yes, this stuff is all misleading. But if we're accepting that what we're trying to recreate is the world of, like, adventure pulp magazines, where panda bears are deadly killers, then I don't see that there's a problem, as long as we know the one from the other. As long as we're very clear about the difference. And a lot of the time, I see people whose ideas about things more important to their daily lives than animal behavior come from games. So I don't know if we can achieve that thing. But if we can, then I think it's perfectly okay for these animal behavior entries to be, you know, based on what you might find in a book in your school library in the 1970s, because the sensational version of something is the version that makes the best adventure story. Just have to realize that adventure stories aren't real. Anyway, on that cheery note, that's about all the time that we have for this episode. In our next one, we're going to be continuing our journey through the animals section of Creature Catalog, and we're going to take a look at the porcupine, comma, giant, the raven and crow, the rhinoceros, and the shark. All of that next time on Monster Man. A show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.